Hello, this is Scott Price, and you're listening to Radio Free World here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Right now I'm joined with Martin Lucas. So Martin, just introduce yourself, please.
Sure. I'm an editor with the Dominion newspaper and an independent journalist.
Excellent. So I kind of brought you in here to talk about your recent article you wrote about the rebranding of the tar sands by the Canadian government in Europe. So kind of just give us the background info of, I guess, who in the Canadian government is doing this and kind of what they're saying. How are they trying to rebrand the tar sands?
Sure. Well, maybe just a few words about the tar sands themselves, though I'm sure your listeners know something about it. The tar sands are kind of a central piece in a global play right now for the dirtiest fossil fuels. Obviously, there's been a decline in easily accessible oil, and it's kind of, rather than leading to a shift to renewable energy, it's led to a kind of shift for a search for the most filthy fossil fuels and resources. They're kind of the central prize of that kind of new frontier, and obviously the tar sands in Alberta are known as some of the most destructive, energy-intensive fossil fuels in the world. They trail only Saudi Arabia in size, and they've come in. Naturally enough, they've come in for a lot of criticism from environmental organizations and others. For not just their carbon intensity, but also, for destroying one of the larger watersheds, for strip mining a huge area, for poisoning native communities downstream. So in order to push this stuff, as the Canadian government is trying to do, they've started to engage in PR wars. Domestically in the States, and also now, as has come clear from release government documents in Europe as well. So on the basis of some access to information requests, I was able to discover that since about late 2009, the Canadian Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade, working alongside Environment Canada, Natural Resources Canada, and the Alberta government, the Foreign Ministry of Canada has been basically running what they call a pan-European oil sands advocacy strategy. When we look through the documents, what it basically comes down to is, as you said, it's a PR campaign on one end. And on the other end, probably even more surprisingly to a lot of Canadians, I think, they are basically getting cozy with the biggest oil companies in Europe, who they call in some of these docs, like-minded allies. I think Canadians would question why the biggest oil companies are like-minded allies to ordinary Canadians. Certainly to the Canadian government and the oil industry in Alberta, they are. And so over the last 2 years or so, this oil sands team, headquartered in England, but working out of 6 or 7 foreign missions across Europe, has basically been running an operation that involves all these secret meetings with oil companies, basically spreading a green positive image to European parliamentarians, responding to negative media coverage, which they're very concerned about. There's a really interesting quote in some of the documents where these government officials are assessing the European scene, and one of them says the oil sands are posing a growing reputational problem, with the oil sands increasingly defining the Canadian brand. Now, Canada's not actually exporting any tar sands oil to Europe, so people might ask, why then are we so busy in Europe? But the issue is that basically, the tar sands industries are expanding massively. So basically, Alberta has become, it became kind of a laboratory for oil companies experimenting with tar sands. And now basically they want to export it everywhere. They want to take it to the Congo, to Russia, Jordan, Venezuela, Madagascar, Trinidad and Tobago as well. But the issue is that the road to these spoils leads through Europe, basically. Right now in Europe, and for the last 2-3 years, the EU has been trying to pass and work on and try to pass what's known as a fuel quality directive. And basically what that would do is it's an initiative to try to promote cleaner transportation fuels. So and early on when they were developing this, they wanted to put a dirty label on tar sands oil. And what that would basically taking into account the fact that it's much more carbon intensive. What that would basically do, what this label would basically do is it would discourage and basically ban European countries from importing that kind of oil. So now, even though Europe doesn't yet export tar sands, import tar sands oil, and probably won't in the future, the Canadian government and the oil industry is very concerned that this could set a precedent in other countries and basically lead to a domino effect, that it would be followed in Asia, obviously where Canada wants to export a lot of oil, might even be followed in the States. And so that's why they've kind of started to move into Europe and to try to undermine this fuel quality directive. And in these documents, the fuel quality directive is definitely one of the main targets that this European oil sands team of Canada is most concerned about. They seem to have had some success because it was reported in the British media just a few weeks ago that the British government, who had previously been supporting this campaign to promote this fuel quality directive, is now changed their tack and will be working to block the EU from singling out the larger carbon footprint of the tar sands. So they're having some success, which is disconcerting, and basically, you know, social movements and organizers need to redouble their efforts and remain really vigilant, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when you say that there, reading the article and hearing you just kind of describe it, I mean, I understand that it's the Foreign Affairs Office, I guess, that is doing a lot of this stuff, right? But I mean, like, so how many people are we talking about? Are they sending over to Europe? I mean, how much money? I mean, is this like a major undertaking by the Canadian government? Are they pouring in, you know, all sorts of people and a lot of money to this?
You know, it's not actually, which is interesting. I think from what I understand, they only have about a dozen officials working on this in Ottawa and in these 8 foreign missions. So that should be of some you know, comfort to us. But they are in the documents that I got. They are constantly carping about how little resources they have and how they really need more resources. And so this has been run by the Department of Foreign Affairs, and it's officially. What we know so far is that it's not a cabinet. It's not run by the cabinet. It's run by the department. So there's no direct oversight from an involvement from any of the cabinet ministers. But I mean, obviously, with the new Harper majority, it would seem likely that they would start to pump a lot more money into these kinds of initiatives. Even with these 10 officials, they have been able to coordinate a lot of really high-level visits that have happened. So, for instance, companies like BP, Shell, Total, the big French company, and the Norwegian State Oil regularly meet with ambassadors, with the heads of these foreign missions from the tar sands group, and it's run to the very top. So, for instance, Canada's Prime Minister Stephen Harper himself, he met secretly with with Total CEO back in June 2010. Right after he went on a publicized, we went to have a publicized meeting with French President Nicolas Sarkozy. So he was there for a few hours just before the G20. He seemed to find time to meet in secret. And since then, Total has announced plans to pump, I think, about $20 billion into their Alberta projects by 2020. So we don't yet know what transpired at these meetings, but it's clear they must have had some impact, and I would think that you're going to see an escalation in these kinds of tactics, especially with Harper looking obviously to appease some of his base, which obviously is located in Alberta. And a lot of backers in the oil sands, and I think these kinds of campaigns are part and parcel of the expansion of the tar sands that he would like to oversee, and that involves obviously the pipeline corridors down through to the States. That's the Keystone XL pipeline. Enbridge, of course, wants to build their pipeline through the Gateway pipeline through BC, through a lot of unceded indigenous territory, and Enbridge also has plans to reconvert some of their pipeline corridors that exist to the eastern seaboard. So obviously, Harper knows that to ensure that this happens, because there's been a lot of environmental and indigenous resistance to these, to make sure that it happens, they need to play the PR game a lot better. There was a WikiLeaks as well, which was interesting, that came out a few months ago. It was a WikiLeaks about that described a meeting between the former U.S. Ambassador Jacobson and the then Environment Minister Jim Prentice. And Prentice had, in the summer of 2009, gone to Norway, and he basically this WikiLeaks described how he was literally shocked at the kind of public debate that was happening in Norway around divestment, around state oil's divestment from the tar sands. Mm-hmm. And he basically indicated that he felt that the Canadian government really hadn't done what they needed to sell the tar sands, and that it was really damaging their ability to sell the tar sands, and it was really having a toll as well on these European companies who they rely on for investment in the tar sands. I think we should expect that domestically and internationally, these kinds of PR wars will just escalate.
Right. Well, I mean, the one interesting thing that I thought of too was that through these PR wars, from what I understand, Canada's reputation internationally has kind of fallen off a bit, and I think, from what I understand, a lot of that does have to do with the environmental record. So it's kind of fascinating that the Harper government would, it seems, trying to go put more resources into this PR campaign. What are they thinking here? Is this kind of go for broke, I guess?
Right, right. Yeah, no, I think you put it well that they are, it seems like they are going for broke. I mean, obviously the issue is not a PR issue. It's an issue of a disastrous environmental record. So one would think that one could just work on that environmental record, and then that would be the best way to fend off the critics. But I really think, like, yeah, the tar sands are simply indefensible by the record, right? And the oil industry in Alberta and the federal government and the Alberta government have shown no signs whatsoever of wanting to deal with the issues. Their concerns are making exorbitant profit, of turning Canada, as Harper says, into a global energy powerhouse. What that basically means is turning us into a third world pump, energy pump for the United States. And if they can have their way, then for other countries as well. That remains the core of the issue, really, is slowing down the tar sands, implementing some kind of moratorium for the tar sands industry. But I don't think the government and the industry is willing. But I think also, in one respect, I think that it can, the fact that they're escalating this PR war can be seen as a reflection of the successes of environmental critics and of mm-hmm. of political movements who are have really been kind of raising these concerns on the international scene and rightfully sullying Canada's reputation. So I think it's Canada has seen the damage that these groups and organizations, often Indigenous-led, seen the kind of consequences of these campaigns, which rightfully point out the record that Canada is setting. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so rather than deal with the substantive issues, they're just ratcheting up their PR campaign. So I think, I mean, not just within Europe, but also, you know, adopting absolutely absurd language around Canada, you know, Canada having being an exporter of quote-unquote ethical oil, which is Ezra Levant's name for it.
Right.
I mean, it's, whether or not it's a liberal democracy or a dictatorship presiding over the extraction of this oil, the extraction of oil itself is still a environmental disaster, and that is the issue. But basically, I think that in some ways, this PR war is an indirect nod to the successes of some of the oil sands opposition and resistance.
Yeah.
It's quite exciting, I think, that Enbridge seems quite unlikely to be able to push through their pipeline, their gateway pipeline. I mean, even a very conservative political risk consultancy group like Eurasia recently acknowledged that First Nations opposition may be insurmountable. I think their quote was something like, exact quote was something like, native land claims scare the hell out of investors, and they're going to knock down the confidence they have in this pipeline. Obviously, the pipeline down through the U.S. heartland, the Keystone XL, has faced a lot of resistance. Right now, it's being reviewed by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and yeah, the push for the fuel quality directive. I mean, Canada actually succeeded last year in getting the EU to remove that label, but thanks in large part to green organizations, to Indigenous groups who have been campaigning throughout Europe, they have now kind of stiffened their spine and reintroduced the dirty label distinguishing tar sands oil from other fuel sources. And they should be implementing that hopefully by the end of this year or in the fall. So that's a hopeful sign as well, mm-hmm. that despite all this PR campaigning, despite the efforts of oil companies, opposition and organizing is working.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but is it just because they haven't been able to go full bore into this, as you've kind of pointed out before, that it's we have yet to see the full force of this PR campaign and the weight? I mean, if you think about it, if it's the Foreign Affairs Office that's doing it, I mean, they could quite literally use the weight of the Canadian state against, you know. So, I mean, is it just that we haven't seen what they really can do?
Well, I think one part of it, I mean, you know, that this, I mean, this was a secret, it was like a secret operation, right? The Canadian government wasn't openly publicizing this tar sands advocacy strategy. So I think that's an indication that they know that if they basically go above ground, it will further embarrass them. So I think to some extent they're reluctant to go public because they know that it's going to cost them as well. But on the other hand, I don't think we should discount that the oil companies in Europe are already doing a lot. Like, you know, companies like Shell, companies like Total, they spend, you know, in excess of 500,000 dollars a year lobbying just EU parliamentarians. So I think Shell is something in excess of $1 million. Just on lobbying around basically this fuel quality directive. So there, but you know, I mean, like, no, the public has no real confidence in oil companies, and so oil companies kind of do these things quite shamelessly. The Canadian government knows they have to proceed with some amount of caution, at least when it comes to basically cozying up to oil companies. So yeah, I mean, I think because of the strength, it's precisely because of the strength of the of environmental activism and organizing, that that they haven't been able to go public with this kind of stuff. So it's kind of it seems to me to be a kind of a precarious kind of dance that the Canadian government involves itself in. But we'll see. I mean, I'm interested to see if they do ratchet up in a public way. I think they'll continue to do what they've done, what oil companies have continued to do, which is, you know, muddy the water, set up all kinds of false grassroots organizations that that try to pretty the image of the tar sands. They know they can't do this publicly, right? I mean, try to hire lobbyists that do that kind of work. So, for instance, one of the other things that was revealed in these documents was that the Department of Foreign Affairs considered hiring a PR company to advise it and also to do work on these issues on its behalf. So that seems to me a real possibility. In the upcoming year or two. That they will have PR companies doing their dirty work, basically.
I mean, and I guess almost to rephrase the last question then, I mean, like I was talking about them not using the full force, and it's essentially they could use the weight of the, you know, Canadian state to push this. And although you've pointed out that, you know, what we've seen, this reaction is a direct result of the success of grassroots movements, but also with, as you also just pointed out, them setting up fake grassroots organizations. Do you still have the confidence in, to put it in one neat term, people power to kind of stop this?
I think that's the only thing we can have confidence in. I think it's really important to be as clear and lucid as possible as we can be about the political terrain and the forces that we're up against, forces that have millions more dollars, that have these state apparatuses that we've been talking about, a diplomatic corps that can, you know, descend on these European capitals. But I think that's the only hope that we've ever had, and I'm quite confident that with diligence and determination, these indigenous communities that are resisting tar sands expansion, these environmental organizations that are working alongside them and campaigning in the States and Europe and at home can have a real impact. I'm really excited about the what's happening in BC right now. I mean, you have a company that has sunk billions of dollars into the Gateway pipeline, and they are meeting against very unified, strong resistance from 60 First Nations communities. And I don't see how Enbridge could get through that kind of resistance. I think, and in Europe too, there are a lot of grassroots organizations who are, as we speak, mounting their organizing against Canadian and oil companies' efforts to undermine the Fuel Quality Directive. Mm-hmm. So I do have a lot of faith. I think without a recognition of the gains that have been made, and that have only been made by grassroots movement, by people power. Mm-hmm. I think we're lost.